you know what? I got a little confused before the song because Chris was trying to sign something to me. You're saying it's Z. It's not Gen X. It's Gen Z. I don't know. Gen Y? I don't even know. You know what? That's when you know you're getting old that you don't even care what they're called. That's awful. I'm sorry. I said I'd never be a crotchety old person, and here I am. That is beside the point. We are Tistis Task. We're from Dorchester. We're grumpy, even though we're in our 20s. We're playing out next at Porch Fest in Somerville. So excited about that. Playing at La Brasa from 4 to 6 p.m. Please come by. Their food is amazing. Drinks wonderful. And there's going to be a terrace, hoping it's beautiful weather. But we're rain or shine on that day. So please come. This is an original inspired by the Southwest and dark, despairing thoughts.
A little
You know what? We're heavily influenced by Yeah Yeah Yeahs and Karen O. And what I love about them is that they're very open about Maps, their amazing song. They never get it right live, and they really have a hard time. And I would say that song, Colorado River, is our Maps, but I actually think it sounded pretty good. I think it's the energy in this room. And many thanks to On the Town with Mikey D for having us, and the memory of Mikey D. Of course, we're looking at him as we perform, and it's just a very special place. And it's so special that I think we're going to give it a shot. We're going to perform and debut our first time together doing an original that I wrote last summer called Men of the Century. Let me just tune up my guitar here to a different tuning. We are Tis Task. It's T-Y-S-K, T-Y-S-K, Task. Spaces in between, of course. And you can find us on Spotify, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. We have lots of videos online. We're playing O'Brien's May 13th. And we're also playing Union Tavern in June. I'm doing a little kind of acoustic set at Gulu Gulu in July in Salem, which is an amazing restaurant. And Chris and I are taking things west to Worcester in October at the infamous Hotel Vernon. So, anyway, here it is. Here's our first time playing this song together.
I tried men of this 21st century. I didn't understand them. They couldn't get right through to me. Why do you look at your computer?
That is the end of our set. It's been such a pleasure to have you guys, to have us. And again, I'm Samantha Hartzell, amazing man behind the drums is Chris Beller. And please find us, please hit us up. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you again.
We'll be right back. can't cover it up. You can try, but you can't get enough. You can try. You can try, but you can't cover it up. You feel high, so come on, keep it up. The desire, can you get enough? You can try. You can try, but you can't cover it up.
Get higher so we can't get it. This is On the Town with Mikey D, 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. We just heard Fuel Heart from Carissa Johnson, Covered Up from Lily Black, Lady Godiva from Ruby Rose Fox, and something from Smitty. But before that, Tisk Tisk Task took us to task. And here they are, ready to talk on the radio.
Yeah.
Improvised talking.
Yep.
Yeah, no, that's kind of the impetus for the name, Tisk Tisk Task. We have a task to do, we have a job to do, and
get it done.
Tisk Tisk if you don't get it done. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great lineup, by the way. We love Lily Black, we love Ruby Rose Fox. Those are wonderful Boston bands.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're so excited to be on your show. Thank you for having us. That was a really good set, and I have to say, like, it felt pretty good. We're new, like, I started this band officially last summer under this project name, and Chris Beller, who's my drummer mm-hmm. with me. I'm Samantha Hartzell, Chris Beller, and I connected in January, right?
Mm-hmm. It was, I was on the plane ride home before they told me to turn my phone off and take it from my hands. And I sent an email, and then by the time I landed back in Boston, I had gotten a response, and they're like, "Oh, cool. Let's jam sometime. Let's figure something out." And
yeah.
That was at the beginning of the semester, and now it's what, like two-ish months later.
3 months. Yeah. So this was a really good show for us. And Chris is a student at the Berklee College of Music.
Yeah, I caught the word semester. Like, that's kind of
right.
It'd be cool to just have semesters like for the rest of your life, but no class.
Oh my God, I love that.
Yeah, no papers, yes. No exams.
Yeah, and then summer break.
Yeah, but spring break.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I miss spring break.
The whole thing would be spring break.
Listen, just, I mean, he's still in college.
Life.
Spring break for me is tax day, and that's a real depression. I don't want to talk about that. Well, we don't want to get too political. But no, I mean, we are politically driven, actually. I should say that. I mean, we're socially conscientious people, and I think that's why we connected. I posted to a Berklee job board some links to the band. I've been doing these songs for the last 10 to 12 years in the Boston area. I went to school at Ithaca College and grew up in North Andover and Harvard, Massachusetts, played out a lot in Boston and New Hampshire. And just over the summer, last summer, I actually was going through a personally very difficult time, and I felt like I should do that. I should do that thing I've always been terrified to do, which is to really commit to forming a band and finding like-minded people. And I feel so lucky to have Chris in my life.
Aww. As the tears begin flowing.
No. I'm sorry. My mascara fell. It's fine. We were working it pretty hard in there. But yeah, Chris is. Tell the people about the bands you've been in, because I know how talented you are.
Making me talk.
He's from California, so there has to be something in there.
Well, I was a self-proclaimed metal drummer for a while, and that was kind of my main personality style for quite some time, and then I started doing musical theater. Musical theater is a little bit different than metal.
Yeah.
So it's very true. It's a bit of a departure. But musical theater is very, very structured, and you read the notes on the page, and you don't do anything else, because if you do, then
everyone's confused. Yeah,
everyone's confused, yeah. And the director's going to start throwing things at you, mm-hmm. and you don't.
In this
want
case,
that.
I am the director. No, I'm mm-hmm. kidding.
let's just say that. Yeah, but musical theater. It turned out that it was like really something that I absolutely loved. So now. My background and my focus at Berklee is to be in musical theater programs and doing shows for them. I already did You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown before spring break, and I've done Legally Blonde.
Nice.
I've done.
I didn't know about Legally Blonde. That's like my favorite chick flick. Yeah. But you know what?
It is a musical.
But what's wonderful about that is I think we believe in theatrics for indie rock and alt rock, which is our sound. And I think we kind of merged that. I mean, Amanda Palmer has punk and cabaret. We have musical theater and Bummer Boston's. Sounds something like that, you know.
Yeah, there's something about that musical theater cymbal choke that really gets in people's heads when you hit the crash and
I remember the musical theater people, when I went to school, they had to do all these tongue twister things.
Oh yeah, red leather, yellow leather, red leather, yellow leather. I can't even do it. I was, I'll toot my own horn here and say that when I was in eighth grade, I was Dolly in the Hello Dolly musical. So you're basically talking to a musical theater legend from when I was 13 and I peaked. But no, I mean,
child star.
Child star.
No, but I just, I really am grateful for your different influences. I think it influences what we do, and it's changed my writing. I mean, a lot of these songs that we've been doing kind of started in my head maybe in high school and college, and they've been on the shelf for about 10 years, and Chris has really awakened it in me. And what artist doesn't struggle and think their music stinks and, you know, no one likes it and no one's going to hear it? I mean, I absolutely have been in the depths of depression about my art and my contribution to society. I think we all feel that way. And I think it's wonderful when you can find someone to vibe with that brings you out of the shadows.
That's the idea.
If you don't have imposter syndrome, you're an imposter.
I'm working on a song about that. I think that's exactly what happened. But I am getting guitar lessons. I'm all self-taught. You know, it's really funny. I don't think we could be any different. Like, I was really into musical theater, and now I kind of hate it. But Chris is helping me find the beauty in it again. But, you know, he's music theory-minded and very talented, obviously. And I'm just self-taught, couldn't afford lessons growing up. So I'm treating myself in my 20s now to guitar lessons because I'm having that imposter syndrome. I mean, I think we're getting some really good shows. I think we have some good momentum. We've only been together since January. We've played Sonia, Club Bohemia. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, we've had a lot of shows.
We played out in Lowell and Worcester. Lowell, we did the Hearing Room, Worcester, just this last weekend.
Yeah, that's a lot.
The Raven. Yeah,
it's been busy.
We play like one to three times a month. I mean, we really enjoy it, and I see those as practices. I think we're going to start slowing down a little bit and focusing on our album. Chris has an opportunity to perform in musical theater this summer as the drummer for a production in Ohio. So we're going to take a little break for the summer. I'm going to be gigging out myself with kind of like an acoustic solo Angel Olsen Waxahachie kind of vibe, I think, on my own, which is what I've been doing for years before I met Chris. And then in the fall, we're going to really work on our album. And we do have some shows coming up before he leaves us for the summer, though. We're playing Porch Fest in Somerville. It's my first time doing that. I'm so excited. We're performing from 4 to 6 p.m. at La Brasa on Saturday, May 11th. And O'Brien's Pub, May 13th. But I think that's actually the day you leave, so that'll be kind of like an acoustic night.
Yeah, May 13th is not...
And that won't be a porch thing, because I don't think you can...
Well, they might put us on the porch.
Like, O'Brien's, they have a patio, but I don't think they let bands... I don't think they let bands play the patio.
I just went there for the first time to... just a couple of days ago to see Salty Greyhound. They're one of my favorite Boston bands right now. Maria Cuneo is the sister of Kyle Cuneo, who's kind of the founding member of Tis Tis Task with me. And he kind of guest stars now, and we have our duo thing for now. But it's wonderful. I mean, I think the Boston community is so tight-knit, and we're so lucky to have so many friends and family and all these different wonderful art projects. Even just hearing on your radio a couple of minutes ago, all the shows coming up, and I want to know who is Father Blueberries. I haven't heard of them. I really need to listen to that. But no, it's encouraging for sure that there is such a scene here.
And I'm not from here, so of course the person to do all of the managing is Samantha, and I'm completely clueless, and you guys throw out names, and I'm like, oh, yeah, totally, I know that group. But it's really fascinating to come here and see the Boston music scene in itself, and how that's a lot different from the San Francisco music scene and the Bay Area music scene in general. It's just very fascinating to be in a new place, really.
And I have to say, everyone's been very supportive.
That's very true.
We last weekend we actually went to see Walter Sickert and the Army of Broken Toys.
Yeah, we love them.
We absolutely love them too. Of course, we saw them at the Oberon and met with Edry, and she just has so many wonderful wisdoms and isms to share with us to kind of stay. You know, I think it's easy to get discouraged maybe when you only play to a crowd of 3 or 5 or 10 people. But we're building our way up, and it was encouraging to know, you know, every big band, every great
successful group in Boston, I think, starts out small and they build. So we have some momentum and we have a hope to get that to that level. And if we don't, that's fine too. I'm really happy just to be a part of the underground scene and to connect with amazing artists like Walter Sickert and, you know, so many others. We met Mint Green.
Mint Green, amazing,
unsigned, incredible Boston band. I mean, there's just so many, and it's really been wonderful to be a little part of that.
And really, it's about the genuine musical expression, which is so important for, you know, every single performance. It doesn't matter if you have if you're in a practice room or if you're in a bar with 2 people or 20 people or 100 people or in a stadium with 100,000 people, it doesn't change. The music is still, it still has to be a genuine expression of yourself, or else no one really believes it. No one buys it.
I love this. We've never really had a philosophical discussion about the music that we play.
We just made one.
Yeah, that's got to be a challenge for those artists that have, like, they're huge and they play these huge rooms and that's mostly what they have to do. Like, sometimes you hear, oh, so-and-so, they played, like, a small room just to have the experience to do that again.
Right, yeah.
And I seem to always miss those shows. I hear about them after. I'm so frustrated.
It's like think about 10,000 of anything anywhere. It's hard to imagine 10,000 of absolutely anything. Mm. Now, 10,000 fans in a stadium screaming at you. Like, that's hard to wrap your mind.
And they're all mad.
And they're all absolutely... You didn't play that solo like the recording.
Hold on. Have you played a stadium show? I mean, you sound like you're speaking from experience. I know you're experienced in California.
I sung the national anthem in front of my college, which was
4,000
people?
4,000? Well, I can't even envision that.
That's close.
Yeah.
Same order of magnitude.
I have to say, Chris has an incredible singing voice, and that's something that I'm hoping to kind of
steal.
Tap into. Yeah, steal. No, I think that he should have a very prominent role in the vocal department as well. I mean, I know how gifted you are, and I'm happy that we can work on it together.
I appreciate it. Yeah, singing is something that I pursued in the past, and since I got to Berkeley, I haven't really had too much time to continue pursuing that, other than like ear training classes and having to sight sing and things, which is not really singing.
I mean, I should say Chris is strapped. He's in many other bands. Sleepyhead is an up and coming. Three others.
Right, well, 3 others. So I'm in 4 bands total, including you. But one of them isn't inside. One of them is class. But so 2 other bands, including you, that are like extracurricular.
Yeah. No, but I'm glad that you make the time. I think it's important.
I once played a gig with a drummer who had like 3 other gigs that same day.
Yep. Yeah, that's the daily struggle. I've definitely been there.
I saw a meme recently that said something like, if a drummer in Boston gets the flu, that's going to knock out 5 or 6 bands in the area, I mean, I think good.
It's a force multiplier if you're if you're a microbe.
Mm-hmm. Well, drummers are really hard to find, I've found, in this area, and good drummers are even more difficult. And what I love the most about Chris's sound, and I actually did audition several drummers before I kind of met with Chris and we connected, and I'm so funny, I didn't know that story about the email on the plane. That sounds so mystical.
Yep.
But, you know, what I love about his drums is that he taps into the melody, and I think some drummers don't do that. They kind of just want to play a beat, and he hears it and makes his own accent on the melody with, you know, different tones.
Because I'm also a singer.
That's true.
I don't have a choice but to do that.
And really, this guy spends like 20 minutes tuning your drum kit. I mean, you make it like... You really care about the tones. I appreciate that. And they're so warm and homey. I love them. I just want to curl up in that tom and fall asleep.
I love that drum set.
Yamaha.
That's a sign of any like really pro drummers. They tune their drums. And like the more pro they are, the more they tune their drums.
Well, listen, Chris takes ear training almost every day. You know, he's got incredible pitch. He's always on me about tuning the guitar and whatever. And we played a show in Worcester. backlining a drum set, and a musician came up to him after and said, "Oh, I think your drums are out of tune."
Oh, that was really, really, really quite funny. Because
then he
don't want to talk about that.
But he played his drums kind of like a bucket.
Like, you know, his toms are like a bucket. Mm-hmm. And he just hits them, and like I had them real high because I think that that's a much more pleasant sound, and we're also not playing like heavy thrash metal.
Yeah, they were a different genre for sure in that show, but it was just funny.
But it was hilarious. I'm like, I looked at him and I'm like,
if only he knew how much Chris stresses like, wait, the tones. That?
oh, sorry, I didn't know that I was out of tune.
So he just meant funny. That they were. Weird.
They were
they
weird.
Sounded weird.
Yeah.
But you could have told them exactly which pitch, which like.
Well, I couldn't have said to the note. No, I don't have.
I play stuff
pitch.
All the time, and he's like, "Oh, that's a D minor seventh."
That's because I have good relative pitch. Well. I don't have perfect pitch. If you gave me a note, I wouldn't be able to know what it is. I'd say that's do, yeah. And then give me another note, and I'd say, "Okay, let's find the next note. That's fa," and that's basically what Berkeley tells you to do. Because we are robots, and we.
But you know, it is amazing having a Berkeley student in the band. As much as we want to kind of make fun of the geekiness of it, like I mean,
I am.
I'm learning so much about different and music theory. Something I never really got in high school. Really wanted to, couldn't get it. And I'm glad we can kind of incorporate it a little bit.
And I'm actually going to college for. I just. Declared my second major at Berkeley. I'm going to be a music education and performance major, focusing mainly on musical theater. But my music education background is really what fuels my nerdiness and my desire to really get into it. And that's the way that I tend to enjoy music, by trying to understand what's going on. And understanding the function behind a piece of music is really fascinating to me, even if I can still enjoy a piece of music without having to know it. It's definitely on the list of things
to
do.
There's no way to know my mind, but
that's true.
Just songs are a little bit more.
You do some cool things.
I don't even know.
It's really...
I appreciate songwriters,
they do that all the time. They're like, how did you just sing... like a polyrhythm without even thinking about it, like, oh, it's just what I felt. I'm like, I can't even feel that. What
I think is really amazing is that she does a lot of variation of different vocal styles,
right.
Of just naturally, like a lot of times a singer will come in to a producer, and a producer will say, "We'll try to do it like different way," like, and like she's just natural at it.
Thanks,
right?
Guys.
Yeah. No.
Thank
Samantha
you.
has a really wonderful tone, and the way I distinctly remember, like when I first saw you at that show that you were not proud of at all.
Yeah, Kyle Cuneo and I, when we were still kind of trying to find our way as a band, Chris had reached out to join the band, and
right.
I said, sure, yeah, we should audition you, but why don't you come to Club Bohemia and hear us in the basement of the Cantab? And my guitar was having a big problem that night.
It was having a real issue.
It was
did
really
not
falling
want
out of tune.
To stay in tune mm. at all.
I just that changed acoustic. The strings. That was my fault.
Yeah, I mean, that happens. And you beat the hell out of your guitar so much. It's like,
I do.
Yeah, so you have to tune pretty often, and when a guitar is not happy with you, it's not going to be a very fun experience. But regardless, when I heard you sing, I thought, wow, there's so much like power and passion and feeling behind that. And like it doesn't matter if you can sing like, you know, as a goddess. So it doesn't matter if you can sing like you know, you're the best singer in the world if you can't express some sort of emotion with it. I've heard people at Berkeley who are virtuoso singers, and they're amazing, but it seems like they hate it. It seems like they just can't stand it. Like, oh, I don't feel anything. Mm. There needs to be some amount of soul in the music. There needs to be some kind of like feeling in order to to really convince your audience that you are doing this because you love it.
I do love it.
And yes, you do. And I was very convinced, which is why I wanted to join you.
That's awesome. That makes me kind of emotional. That's really sweet. It reminds me of, I watch this video a lot on YouTube. I think it's Elliot Smith songwriter class. I forget what you Google to find it. But Elliot Smith, of course, amazing songwriter, incredible musician. He is giving advice to a songwriting class. And he's saying, you know, you don't want to write what you think people want to hear. Because sometimes you listen to a song and it's unclear. He says, it's unclear whether anyone liked it at all, even the person writing it. And, you know, he said, I'm more captivated and it's more compelling to me for even just the performer to be into the music. Like, just because you like it, I'm going to like it, you know?
Right.
And that's what I think about a lot, too. And I think that's why I'm having this imposter syndrome also. I'm wanting to better myself, to get on Chris's, you know, virtuoso level. I mean, you are. You're at one of the best schools in the country for music. And it's intimidating to a self-taught person, but... I want to start, I can hear where our stuff is going to go and how we can grow and develop, and I want to develop with you, that's the thing. So, that's kind of my hope, is that we're going to make music that we really want to hear.
Very, very true.
Well, and you have an opportunity to focus on, like, aspects of music theory that are just important to a particular song that you're doing. And that's like, that would be an amazing way to learn aspects of music theory instead of like, oh, let's do all these exercises and then hate it.
No, absolutely. You know, I mean, I understand music theory. I just, you know, it's like the way I get algebra. Like, I just don't enjoy it. You know? Like, I was the soprano section leader in high school, and I have done some choral work in around Boston and Cambridge. And I enjoy that. I enjoy sight reading and reading music and doing all of that. But I just, I think also I like to have no rules when I'm writing music. Like, even, again, like, I'm so inspired by Elliot Smith and his incredible ideas. And I think in that same video, he says, someone asks, you know, how do you compose a song, which is such a ridiculous question to ask someone. Like, I don't know what the answer could possibly be.
And how do you get your guitar to sound so good?
He's talking about, you know, just find different shapes. Just, you know, I like to think of shapes.
Yeah.
And for me, like, I think I have some of that, what is that called?
Synesthesia.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think I've always had that growing up. Like, we had a little keyboard at home, and I went through it with some colors, post-it notes, and taped them on the board, and I started thinking about, like, blues and golds and reds, and I definitely hear that with guitar, too. So for me, it's less about shapes, and it's more about, like, the colors that I can feel, honestly. Like, if I know, wow. We haven't talked about this.
No.
If you look at my notebook, no, you'll see like notes that are like hot purple,
right.
Violet. Yeah. Like, that's the chord that I hear. But I don't, yeah, I try not to overthink it too much when I'm writing, because I just think, oh, I'm going to fall into a pattern that's been done. I would like to do something that hasn't been done before. Although, of course, that's such a tall order. I mean, even just hearing how many people are in Boston making incredible music, it's just fun to try.
The Beatles did not know a lick of music theory, but they still utilized music theory concepts in their music constantly. Not because they had to know music theory, but because they used their ears.
Mm-hmm.
And the quote-unquote rules of music theory, classical or jazz music theory, they're not really rules, they're guidelines. And being a musician and being an effective player and composer is knowing what's in the box, knowing what's in the rules, and then knowing when to break them. And then being able to say, I broke this rule because I wanted to. I broke this rule because I wanted this feeling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Instead of just writing a bunch of notes on a page and saying, good enough. And I always bring up the Beatles because, you know, they wrote such amazing music. Mm-hmm. And some of these insane, really weird classical harmony concepts, like the German augmented sixth, they use it Right. Yeah. No, I know. She's giving me a look. Like something like that. It's weird chord. They used it because they heard that the function of the chord and the rules that we create as music theorists or music teachers is to emulate a specific sound. And these rules are in place because they're saying, if you want to sound like 40s jazz, you have to follow these rules. If you want to write a song that sounds like the American Songbook, the only way that you can do it is by following these rules. But the Great American Songbook writers weren't necessarily following the rules. They were following a sound. They were following their ears. And being able to synthesize both this idea of a rule and a restriction and turn that into something really, you know, really great and a type of artistic expression that's free is a difficult thing to do, but exceedingly important to write music that's actually good. big eye roll.
No, it's a lot of pressure. That's all that I mean, you know?
I can help you.
I know. I'm good. That's fine. No, I think we're going to continue to be a good team. I'm really glad that we have Tis Task. I mean, it means so much to me, and definitely I was having a hard time last summer, emotionally, lots of difficulties, and my father is terminally ill, actually, and I've been dealing with that a lot.
Yeah, sorry to hear that.
Oh, thank you. He has a neurodegenerative disorder. It's very rare. It's called multiple system atrophy, and it's basically an accelerated form of Parkinson's. Mm. So he's really in, decline now. And we talk about this a lot. I'm really close with my father, and so much so, I love listening to you talk about music, because that's how my father talks about music. And he was, he doesn't have a lot of motor skills still. Mm-hmm. But he was a wonderful guitarist and a wonderful pianist, mm-hmm. and his mom forced him out in Chicago to take lessons. And I think also that's why they didn't want to get me lessons growing up, my parents, because my dad just remembered hating it so much. But I know he's very intelligent in that way with the music theory. And we talk about music all the time, and I mean, it means a lot to me. I have like a running playlist in my phone on Spotify of like dad's favorites, because dad finds these incredible songs. And I mean, like Trouble by Cat Stevens is a song that he'll play, and he just starts crying, you know, and like he feels that emotion and that music. And that's exactly what I want to convey as a folk singer, as a rock singer. Mm-hmm. But just dealing with all this end of life stuff in the conversations that we've been having, we've been talking about kind of making the most of your time. And I think that's when last summer, my father's my best friend, so last summer was very hard, and he's stable now, but it's hard. We were just talking about taking advantage, you know, taking advantage of the time you have, the skills you have, and living life to the fullest. And I was like, okay, you know what, like, I called my friend Kyle Cuneo at the time, and I talked to him about the Blues Brothers, which is, funny enough, my dad's favorite movie, based in Chicago, where he's from. And I said, we're on a mission from God. We've got to get the band back together. Like, that's how I felt. And anyway, I think our music with Chris is really growing, because we can put that passion into it and then think about why we're here, why we're doing this, because we want it.
Yeah, and my problem is that I'm way too far into my head. So I think that
that's
Samantha,
okay. See, you said that you could help me, and I'm going to say I can help you loosen up a little bit.
Right. it kind of comes with the territory of being somewhat of a perfectionist, and just like not really knowing when to let go, or when to let sleeping dogs lie, or just like stop touching a thing. I'll be like, oh, this chord progression sounds really cool. What's it doing? I'll write it down. I'll go, oh, that's cool. And I'll play it about three more times, and I throw it away because I can't stand listening to it anymore, because it gets in my head.
I have to say, when we first started making music together, we were performing in Berklee practice rooms, rehearsing, and he Chris would bring his markers and write on the whiteboard and make a form. And I mean, it was just like, oh my God, like, just listen, just feel it. It's dun, 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 dun. And you'd be like, no, it's six time. And it was 4-6-2-2
Right.
6-4 And it was just, but anyway, I think like,
that's because that's the way I learned initially. And I had to go through that. I had to go through that moment of being like, okay, here's what we got. Because otherwise you end up playing a different song every single time.
Well,
which,
you know.
Which is like but cool, like but we're not just, the Grateful Dead.
But so. we give and take, you know, like it's a little, you've got things to contribute, I've got things to contribute, and definitely we have arguments for sure. I mean, even just about forming a
set. No, we never argue. Never.
But it's good. It's completely constructive criticism. Like I take all the feedback and the edits could help. So this is exactly the kind of music project that I wanted.
Please do feel free to tell me to shut up every once in a while.
No. But seriously, we're just so grateful for the opportunity to be on the radio. Thank you so much for having
That's
us.
Cool.
And we love On the Town with Mikey D. And, you know, really happy to be here with Joel, who's just making the sound amazing in the other room. Thank you.
Oh, I'm excited to hear those recordings. That's very, very nice.
I met Joel several years ago at a house party with Sean O'Brien and Linda Jung, who were his, you know, bandmates with Joel and Carolyn in Curious Ritual. And I have to say, that's how I started getting into music. I have to really applaud my childhood mentor, Sean O'Brien. We met in North Andover when he was working for the Public Access Channel, and I was just this, like, sad, confused 15-year-old crying in a hallway, I think, and he was like, hey, do you want to come and help me film a school committee meeting tonight? And we just became like really great friends, and we've been friends ever since, and came to my wedding, to my husband, and you know, he's a great guy, and he encouraged me, you know, play the guitar, try it, get a band together, try it, like, and he would record me when I was a teenager. I mean, he really got me into it. So to I have to give my hats off to Sean O'Brien and then Joel for having the opportunity to put us on the radio, too. It's really kind. We're really lucky to be surrounded by so many talented people in Boston.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but both Sean and Joel are they're old friends of mine and great people.
Oh, my goodness. Good. Well, so you were in the music scene as well?
Yeah.
What band?
I was in a band with Sean called Kings of Feedback.
Goodness, you were in Kings of Feedback.
Yeah.
I know that.
Yeah.
Oh, so funny. That's amazing.
What did
I
you
mean,
play?
See so many
guitar
influences.
And samples.
That's awesome.
Cool.
Like so many influences of mine come from like Curious Ritual and Swerve Driver and PJ Harvey. I mean, I remember Linda listening to a recording that I had done with Sean and calling me to say, you sound like PJ Harvey, do you know who that is? And I was 16 and I was like, no, I don't know who that is. And they got me into it, and then Sean bought me a Swerve Driver album, and of course the project you did with Robert as well. That's one of
amazing stuff.
I'm sorry, I'm forgetting the name of the full project. Is it
It's a long name.
Yeah. It's incredible, though. I'm just very fortunate to be around those kinds of artists.
I really like Jacob Collier. That's about as far of a departure as you can possibly get from... It's really fascinating, really. The genre of music that I tend to listen to is like, so removed. And it feels very interesting to... like, I held Samantha hostage in the car with my music for a little bit of time.
No problem.
And it's like, it's really interesting because she'll be like, put this on. And I'll be like, I have never heard this in my life, and I really like it. And it's so interesting that the different spaces
the
that
white
we hold.
The Stripes, Sylvanesso, Dresden Dolls.
Not so much the White Stripes. All but yes, things. Yeah, Dresden Dolls, really, really neat.
Boston number, based,
and it's like it's so fascinating because unless you're lying to me, who knows? You like the music that I tend to like.
I did.
And
math rock and all that crazy
it's
stuff.
My
just as long as it's not calculus rock.
This is
no
what someone said to me the other day from Berkeley. They said, "Oh, my band's math rock," and I was like, "What is that?" Really scary.
Math rock, yeah. Math rock.
Nobody's ever doing like history rock or like chemistry rock.
Do you know what I mean? Like parabola rock. Yeah. I don't know.
There
pedals.
Is orchestral rock, so yeah, at least we got the music part of that. But yeah, math rock, it's
Yeah.
It's great. I love math rock.
No, I'm excited to see where we're going to go. I mean, we've mostly been doing my songs, so I think we're going to have to work together on getting into your musical theater math mind soon.
Oh, Lordy.
All right, so this is On the Town with Mikey D, and this we've been talking to Tisk Tisk Task. Maybe you want to remind folks of your next couple shows.
Absolutely, thank you. I'm Samantha Hartzell, and my partner is Chris Beller. We're Tisk Tisk Task, based out of Dorchester. We are playing May 3rd at the Unearthed Open Mic in Dorchester at Homestead Cafe. Then Porch Fest in Somerville. So excited about that. At La Brasa from 4 to 6 and O'Brien's May 13th. You can find us online, on Instagram, Facebook, all those places. Tisk Tisk Task.